Well, the Melbourne Cup is almost upon us, believe it or not. It's extraordinary that it's November, isn't it? And I have a real treat this morning because we're going to talk to the novelist Gerald Manane, a man whose obsession with racing surpasses everything else except perhaps writing. In fact, he once said that all art, including music, aspires to the condition of horse racing. And his new book, Something for the Pain, A Memoir of the Turf, is just out. So it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program. Gerald, good morning.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Now, I have to say that a lot of this is very familiar to me because I too was raised with horses. My father had horses and I knew trainers and the jockeys and so on and so forth. And I was stunned this week, as only racing people could be, to hear of that Melbourne steward, Terry Bailey, being shot at his home. I thought all of that had gone away, Gerald.
I thought most of it existed only in the minds of people who didn't know much at all about racing. And it gives me the opportunity to go a little bit diagonally, I suppose, and say that throughout all my writing career, I've been annoyed and irritated by the attitude of some people, certainly not people such as yourself, but people who actually have sniggered and used words such as these. So you're a writer, but you're interested in horse racing. And the unspoken, the assumptions there are that horse racing is for bogans, for criminals. It's a place where men with hats pulled down over their eyes hatch evil plots. And this kind of incident, of which I know no more than I've read in the papers, this would play into the hands of the sniggering people. And it makes me a little bit unhappy that that is so.
Well, quite. I mean, I was brought up with my father's stories when it was real open season on the stewards. This is in Western Australia and in places like Kalgoorlie, and in the sort of 30s and 40s, which you sort of say that was the golden age of racing, but then they cleaned it up, quotes, and this is really one of the first, other than some outings by people like Robbie Waterhouse, that brings back those days. And, you know, you're a very sentimental man. I wondered how much it evoked for you.
Well, if I let it, in fact, the first thing that comes to mind is a part of the book that I'm very proud of, which is an evocation, if you like to call it, of what I call Old Flemington. Mm. I'm writing in one of the sections of the book about a professional punter called Teddy Ettershank, who I suppose I could say he led my father astray, but he also gave him some damn good tips, and Dad won a lot of money on Teddy's tips at times. And I imagine a scene in which Teddy Ettershank's grandfather, who was a racing man, and another unnamed character are lurking under a peppercorn tree on a hot afternoon way back in the late 19th century, and as I put it in the book, hatching a plan against the bookmakers. It wasn't a plan to shoot anybody. It was a plan to make big money by slightly illegal or underhand methods. I don't like thinking about gunfire, but I do like thinking about plots against bookmakers.
Oh, but, except the plots against the bookmakers took in people like your good selves, the mug punters, and some of your favourites were, we called it pulled, I think you called it nicely restrained.
Geraldine, yes. I'm assuming that we were in the plots, and we were on the inside. I'm not interested in plots that I know nothing about. I want to be on the inside of the plots. And my father was on the inside a couple of times.
You write about your father and you say that racing was often for him, what you say sometimes is so for you, a sort of higher vocation, excusing you both from engaging with the mundane. Now, could you explain how and why you might see it that way?
Well, an image came to my mind just then of my father sitting at night in the days before television, and my brothers and I would be listening to the radio, a radio serial or a radio play, and Dad would be sitting at the table with a pencil and paper and a form guide. I suppose he wasn't working out his debts so much as working out what sort of bets he would need to pay off those debts. But he certainly wasn't listening to the radio. He was hardly aware of us. He did, for much of his life, live in a kind of semi-dream world involving racing. And the other thing about it was his debts and the need to escape from his debts caused him several times to have to almost literally flee and do the sort of thing that people call moonlight flit. And a lot of the time he may have been preparing for that. He was always looking for better jobs where he could earn a little bit more and not perhaps need to bet so much.
Well, your house went, didn't it?
Twice it went. We had to get to sell two houses to pay off debts, but the sale of the second was a more exciting, it wasn't exciting at the time, but within a year he'd won enough to buy another house.
You're very generous to him.
I have mixed feelings. It's too long ago now to harbour anything but tolerant feelings.
I wonder what your mother felt.
She was much younger than he, and for many years she accepted everything. She rebelled for the first time when we went to a place near Wangaratta in 1951. And when Mum saw the house that we were supposed to live in, for the first time that I was ever aware of, she rebelled and said no. She couldn't go home straight away because we had nowhere to go, but we stayed there a fortnight, and we were farmed out after that among relatives. This was all because of horse racing.
See, that's what I want to ask you. What is it that you think, on reflection, interests you most? Is it the people in this great pageant? You talk about racing as a pageant, a way of life. Is it the horses? Is it the element of chance? Is it the tribe that you belonged to? That's what I'm intrigued by, because the new tribe who are buying in, like the Arabs, you mentioned this, the rich Arabs who underwrite the Melbourne Cup, you don't seem as attracted to them.
Very little interest. I actually avert my mind, if you can use that expression. I avert my mind from those.
Why?
Because it doesn't belong in my... Because I'm too old. What a simple answer. I can't cope with change anymore. My memories...
I don't know that you ever could you?
I like to dwell on the great age of racing, as I call it, which began to come to an end when the TAB was introduced in 1961. I've nothing against the TAB. I was a great user of the TAB for much of my later life, but it started its most serious effect was that the crowds continued to decline or accelerated their decline. But I'm off the subject. Going back to your question about what's the real appeal for me, I'm going to spring a rather serious semi-philosophical term on you. I love about racing what I call its potentiality. I love the moments in the mounting yard before a race when anything is possible, when any group of owners and trainers standing with their jockey, the jockey in the stable colours or the owner's colours, any group is permitted and is free to think that their horse is going to win. And I'd like to prolong that moment. I like to sort of look around from group to group and think, yes, it might be their day, it might be their day. And there's also another way of viewing this, what I call potentiality, is to view the finish of a race, a photograph of the finish, because you can't come to this understanding as they pass the post, it's happening too rapidly. Look at the finish and look at the horses that finish second, third, fourth, or close up and fifth, and think how close or how nearly they made it. And what must be the feelings of their owners and their connections. That, to me, and there's much more in racing that appeals to me, but if you force me into the corner and ask me to say, you know, what it is in particularly, that's it.
You've never sat on a horse, and you don't seem particularly interested in the animals, and it was the only part of your book that I couldn't identify with, because I find the animals breathtaking. You don't?
Oh, I don't dislike... I mean,
you don't dislike them, but they don't...
I look at them and admire them, but in that Les Carline, I suppose the best of all racing writers that I've read in Australia, he sees things about horses that I couldn't possibly notice. One horse might have an unusual alertness or another, a sort of sleepy, relaxed air about it. I don't notice anything like that. I can tell if a black horse walks into the yard. They're very rare, and I like certain... I suppose I prefer chestnuts to bays and browns, but apart from that, you could show me photographs of Tullock and Burnborough and Farlap, and I'd have trouble identifying one from the other if the jockey was not aboard.
Who is your favourite?
Burnborough.
Yes, he was my father's favourite, I must say. And you think he was better than Farlap?
I think he was very close to being as good as Farlap.
Now, you didn't, you know, you mentioned a range of them. You didn't mention my favourite, it's Empire Rose, that wonderful mare. She's not in your little pantheon, isn't she?
I had to give up going to the races for years when my children were growing up. I've always boasted that I've never deprived my family of anything because of my being a writer or a race goer or whatever, and our family life was rather stressful. Our kids were, all three of them arrived within about 15 months.
Oh my goodness.
We didn't intend that. Two of them were twins.
Oh, I see.
They didn't come 5 months apart.
That's quickly doing the maths.
Yeah, two of them were twins, and we had a stressful family life for some years with illnesses and problems. But when they were over, my wife and I started going to the races regularly, and I didn't see Empire Rose at her best, or I didn't hardly ever saw her.
But you'd watch the Cup, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right. But for whatever reason, she didn't make the impression on me that other horses
had
made.
I'm stunned, honestly, Gerald. And obviously, stayers like Kingston Town and Burnborough and so on, they mean much more to you than sprinters like Black Caviar or Takeover Target.
You've picked that in one, and the best staying performance I ever saw was Kiwi win the 1983 Melbourne Cup. Mm. I was standing on a little set of steps out in the flat. In those days, you could park your car for $5 in the centre of the course, and we used to take food and drink, a group of us, families, and we watched with our binoculars. And when I last saw Kiwi as they approached the turn, he was in last position. And when I next saw him as they passed the post, he was two or three lengths in front of the second horse. And I've watched it many times on a DVD, and I just can't watch it enough, the way that horse accelerated down the straight. Although I never saw Burnborough, that was how I imagined Burnborough finishing.
Came early off, he came from the back off, and yes, I remember that, and I thought, he can't possibly stay there. And he did. I have to ask you this about the pin board that you had at one stage on your desk with four pictures on it. It had two photos of Burnborough, one of Emily Bronte and one of Marcel Proust. Well, those last two, tell us why they've been important to you.
Something about the book Wuthering Heights and the way it was written, the circumstance, the life experience of the woman who wrote it, living in an isolated vicarage in the north of England and writing a book that seemed to have come from almost a Shakespearean mind with a wealth of experience and behind it. I've always been stirred by the story of the Brontes, and I was sometimes not exactly accused, but suspected by my students when I was a teacher of fiction writing of being a sort of male chauvinist or some kind of something of that kind. But I always escaped from that accusation by pointing out that one of my top favourite writer in English of fiction was Emily Bronte. Marcel Proust, I didn't read Marcel Proust till I was in my 30s, and I managed to read the book twice. I wish I had time and energy to read it a third time. His involvement and his obsession with recollections and attempts to regain the past, it sort of just touched something in me. Just like horse racing itself, people say, well, why were you attracted to it? I have no idea. It was just the most natural thing in the world, natural and inevitable. But there's one other thing about those pictures on the wall. I took a bit of a delight in provoking people because I was, let's use that word, academic for a few years. I liked to confound the expectations of people who thought academics wore beards and had certain political opinions and knew nothing about horse racing. And that was one of the reasons why I put Burnborough up next to Emily Bronte and Marcel Proust, because in my opinion, I put it in the book, I think they all enriched my life equally.
Love it. Gerald, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much. I should ask you, who do you recommend for the Cup?
I'm not just trying to escape, but I have to look at the field when it's finally drawn up, and it'll be a horse that will be at about 12-1 or under, and a horse that had winning or close to winning form at its previous start or its second previous start. I mean that's pretty easy to say, but I've done pretty well at the Melbourne Cup. Can't pick a Caulfield Cup winner or a Cox Plate winner, but I'll come close to picking it when I've seen the final fields, if you don't mind.
Excellent. Oh no, it's very good. That's giving us all something to work with. More than a lot of them give us. Thank you very much indeed, Gerald.
That's been a pleasure. Thanks, Geraldine.
Gerald Munnane, Australian writer and novelist. Something for the Pain is his book, a memoir of the turf. It's published by Tex, and I think you'll enjoy it. And I did actually ask Helen Thomas, ABC's resident horse specialist, what she suggested. She often gives us very good tips, if you recall, for Melbourne Cup. She suggests preferment. I'm just reading her text here, and she's warming to the little mare Gust of Wind. If you care to take that on board, she usually is pretty good. And she just asked me to mention that they're going to be broadcasting all through on News Radio, where she runs. And the special guest throughout the spring is Gay Waterhouse. So good luck to us all.